Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The Wisconsin Public Service Commission has been at the forefront of some of the state's most significant innovations over the last year, from record investments in broadband expansion to changes in energy policy, getting us closer to the governor's goal of zero carbon emissions by 2050. So how is the state doing and what can we expect next? Here to talk about that is PSC Chairperson Rebecca Cameron Vogue. Welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back. It's good to be here.
All right. We have a lot to cover. We are going to start with broadband expansion. So we are going to start by looking at a map. We know none of the maps really are perfect at this point, but the map that we're looking at now is the map from the FCC from 2020. And at that time, they said that here's the folks in the red here, mostly rural areas that didn't have access to broadband. Also, about a year ago, you told the legislature that about 400,000 households did not have broadband access in Wisconsin. Last year was the year of broadband access, 2021 in Wisconsin. There was a goal of 97% coverage of broadband in Wisconsin for folks to have at least minimal acceptable service speed. How close are we to that goal?
Well, we're getting there. And I love that you're opening with the map, because the map is helpful, but we know that those maps are imperfect. In fact, as we get more data in and we're able to populate our own PSC map, we realize that there are even more than the 400,000 residents that still lack access. Yes,
okay.
We know that to be true. So yes, we're making progress. Since 2019, we have invested enough money, almost $200 million, to connect nearly 300,000 residents and businesses. But we know that there are still people who remain without adequate broadband. Our latest estimate is that about 650,000 Wisconsin residents still lack access to the infrastructure.
So that's even more than what you thought last year at this time.
It is. And that's because as we get more data in about coverage at a granular level, we're able to really drill down and better estimate how many people don't have that access. And so that's a really important tool for us, the data that we get. And we get that voluntarily from the internet service providers, but it takes a lot of work to input that data into the map to get a very, very true picture of still who lacks access. And the way that we like to describe it is we need to be able to use the funding available to us at the PSC as more of a scalpel approach to be sure that we're really, really, really honing in on the areas that still lack that access. Rather than just looking at broad swaths of, for instance, census tracts.
Sure.
That's not going to get us there.
So are we behind other states? Like, are other states have more coverage than what we do?
No. You know what? What has been very gratifying is I've actually fielded calls from other commissions across the country, some of whom have never had a broadband office, and they're looking just now to start their own broadband office. We're fortunate here in Wisconsin that the legislature had the forethought to establish the broadband office and to be able to administer the state broadband expansion grants. I think it's also important to point out that while we know there are still approximately 650,000 people who lack access, we also know that there are about the same number of Wisconsin residents who can't afford broadband. So
it's a different type of inaccess.
Yes, exactly. So the way that we are looking at it at the PSC is there are three A's. There's access to the actual physical infrastructure. There's affordability. Can people really afford the level of service that they need to engage in daily life? And adoption. Do they understand how to live in a digital world? So there's a digital literacy piece that's a part of that too. So we're really, really focused in on those three areas.
You mentioned a little bit about the money. There has been record amounts of money in Wisconsin in the last biennial budget, $129 million coming through the state budget. And then Governor Evers put another $100 million in federal funds on top of that. Is that enough? Are we going to have to continue to invest more money?
We are going to have to continue to invest more money. As you indicated, because of the biennial budget appropriation, we have $129 million. We made $100 million of that available, and applications were due March 17th. We received nearly 200 applications seeking almost $500 million. So the need continues to be there. I have said, and I will continue to say, that this is more than just a money problem. We have to come up with ways to be innovative. While fiber is certainly the gold standard in terms of providing internet infrastructure, we know that there are places in Wisconsin where fiber just isn't feasible. It's not going to be able to be put in the ground. So where does something like a satellite come in? Where does a fixed wireless technology come in? It's really important for us at the commission that we use that scalpel approach and that we are technology agnostic. But yes, we've been fortunate to have historic investments made in broadband, but there's more work to be done.
You mentioned that recent grant announcement that you got 194 applications requesting almost $500 million. You're really realistically only going to be able to fund about a quarter of those.
That's right.
What are communities doing with that money?
So it's a couple of different things. First of all, when they come to us seeking a broadband expansion grant, it has to be a partnership. So it's a public-private partnership. Those are the applications that we see. And in some instances, it's where a community has had a very good relationship with a local internet service provider, and they need to just further build out a network that's already in place. There are other applications where we see that there have been no interested providers. And so then we see even smaller providers partnering up with that community in order to get broadband into their area. There's also work being done at the PSC and with other state agencies to reach out to local units of government and to try to help them with their funding of ARPA dollars. So because of the infusion of federal dollars that came in and specifically were earmarked for broadband infrastructure, there are communities who have the ability to use their own dollars. And we've seen that in places. Eau Claire comes to mind as a county who took action at the county level that said, we're going to use our ARPA funds to do some broadband projects within our county.
So just a variety of locally developed ideas. What have supply chain or other workforce challenges, how has that played into our ability to expand broadband?
You know, we haven't heard of many challenges on those two fronts yet. I should probably be knocking on wood because, of course, we're seeing supply chain issues across
everywhere,
every
mm-hmm.
industry. But we are in really close contact with the internet service providers, and to date, we haven't heard of many issues along those lines.
One of the challenges that you just kind of touched on is this question of inequities. Where are the inequities that continue to exist? And using that scalpel, we're going to hear from two bipartisan legislators who kind of talk about the inequities that they see back in their district.
You go across the district, and you know, and I'm sure everybody, legislators hear the same thing. You know, this person has halfway decent internet up in the rural areas, and there's many places that we don't have anything. You know, it's just, and or it's dial-up, and it takes us forever to do anything. And I think we see that sometimes, you know, when I'm on Zoom with different things, that, you know, a person has to shut off their video so they can speak, because otherwise it cuts out on them. I like the idea of that new equipment that Brown County is basically kind of doing a test on to take and figure out where it's good, where it's bad, and maybe that somehow we need to get that out to all our communities so they can test and see, and so we have a good idea of where we have the worst problems.
Many of the communities I represent were last to receive electricity in the 30s, and they are considered not profitable by many broadband internet providers today. Expanding essential services like electricity and broadband in western Wisconsin isn't for the weak-hearted, but it's critical for parents to work, kids to keep up on their schooling, and businesses to thrive. Mr. President, my message is simple. Let's not screw up a good thing. Let's get everyone connected by staying focused on broadband expansion for rural communities first, and then focus on getting people super-fast internet. Let's continue to show the love for broadband expansion in Wisconsin.
So one good thing about this issue is there has been a lot of bipartisan support for broadband expansion, but recently the legislature has been struggling with this balance between unserved areas that don't currently have any broadband and this question of underserved. When you think about the equity issues, are we focusing on unserved, underserved? What is equity in broadband?
And I think the answer is both. I think we need to continue to focus on both as we have in prior grant rounds, because it is an issue that affects each part of our state a little bit differently. So in the rural areas, the topography is generally the biggest challenge and the sparse population density, right? So that's why over the years we haven't seen a lot of really active or robust investment by internet service providers, because it takes a longer time for them to get their return on investment. You look at more densely populated parts of our state that have higher populations that maybe have the infrastructure, but it isn't up to what it should be. The speeds aren't what they should be. And that's just as frustrating as having no access. So in places like Brown County, Dane County, Milwaukee County, we hear all of the time, yes, the infrastructure is there, but we're not able to stream. We're not able to participate in teleworking, or our kids aren't able to attend school virtually. That's an access issue. That is an underserved issue. And so we try to really, really strike the balance and use that scalpel to make sure that both unserved and underserved are being taken care of. And in some cases, that's why we have to continue to be technology agnostic, because there are situations where if an area of the state is completely unserved, isn't getting them some level of service better than continuing to have no level of service? So that's what we strive to do. And it is, you hit the nail on the head, it is nice that it is and continues to be a bipartisan issue. I think we're fortunate at the PSC that everything we do is apolitical. When you talk about energy and water and broadband, those are areas that we see a lot of bipartisan interest and a lot of bipartisan support.
Switching gears now just a little bit to an issue that maybe isn't as bipartisan as broadband, climate change. Mm-hmm. So the PSC has been working on the governor's goal of getting to zero carbon emissions by 2050. This last September, I know that commissioners agreed to move forward, not with specific policy changes, but to further explore some policies in the area of utility rates, mm-hmm. and planning processes, customer affordability. Other states have more requirements around long-range utility planning. Wisconsin doesn't. Should we?
That's right. I think we should. I think it helps us as regulators to have a holistic view of what our state utilities are planning to do and what is in their generation portfolio, what types of power plants they have, what they're planning on keeping, what they're planning on retiring. I think it would be helpful. That being said, I think we have the tools and the expertise already that we need to be able to make really good decisions. And I also think it's important to note that the governor's goal of getting to zero carbon by 2050, that goal has largely been echoed by our state's largest investor-owned utilities, who have come out with their own goals. They have shareholders and they have customers who are demanding that they get to zero carbon. And that roadmap to zero carbon docket that you mentioned, that's our way as regulators to sort of take a step back and really examine all of the different moving pieces that are a part of getting to zero carbon. Because it's not as easy as, okay, well, just have all of the utilities retire their coal plants and replace it all with solar. It is so much more technical than that, and it is so much more nuanced than that, and we want to make sure this is a once-in-a-generation transition. The transition we are seeing in the energy industry has never happened before. So we are going from predominantly fossil-fueled generating facilities, and we're transitioning over to zero-carbon generating facilities. we have to continue to keep our eyes on ensuring that the lights stay on and that electric rates remain affordable. All of that has to be up here, right, while we're working out the technological issues that will come along with it.
So are those utility voluntary plans, are they aggressive enough to meet this target of carbon-free by 2050?
They are. And in some cases, they're actually more aggressive. What we've seen is that some of the targets that started out looking at 2050 have slowly been adjusted to be even sooner. So we've seen some go to 2040, some go to 2035. Some have announced that they will have zero coal in their generation portfolio by 2030. And in energy industry terms, 2030, that being 8 years away, that's not a long time. That's right. Not a long runway. So we have to be sure that we are very, very deliberate and that we are very, very rational about the steps that we take to get our state to zero carbon.
Speaking of steps, you recently hosted some conversations around something called performance-based utility. We could get in the weeds really quickly, but what does that look like? And if we moved in that direction, how would things change?
So at a really high level, what we're looking at is for the last 100 plus years, the way that utility rates have been calculated has really been based on how much capital they spend to build power plants and generating facilities. What performance-based regulation does is it turns that convention sort of on its head and says, instead of looking at how much steel you're putting in the ground, let's look at other performance metrics like emissions reductions, like energy efficiency measures, like reliability statistics, and let's see if we can craft rates and the associated return on equity to align with those metrics instead of aligning your rates and your return on equity with how much steel you're putting in the ground.
Different types of incentives for the
yes.
utility. What does that mean for the consumer? Or do you have to be careful in not having a negative impact on a consumer?
Definitely have to be careful about not having a negative impact. You also have to be very careful when you're thinking about these metrics, which is why we've opened up this proceeding and why we invited national experts to come to Wisconsin to talk about this, because you don't want to be incentivizing behavior that would occur without that incentive, because that will then serve to drive up rates, and that's not what we want to do.
So the governor's task force on climate change had recommended that the PSC should be looking at the social costs of carbon. Currently, PSC doesn't look at that.
Right.
And should we?
I think that's a question that should be decided by the legislature. Right? So everything that we do in terms of setting rates and when we are looking at applications for a utility or an independent power producer to install or to build a new facility, we are governed by the statutes. And currently, there is, as you indicated, there is no requirement that we look at the social cost of carbon. I think that if the legislature thinks that that is something that should go into our analysis, then we would certainly incorporate that into our analysis.
Do you see any momentum for that happening?
You know, I've seen it sort of go in fits and starts. There's a lot of talk about how that calculation would be made. And so I think it's one of those situations where the devil's in the details.
Remains to be seen.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So the Wisconsin Initiative on Climate Change Impacts, they just issued their 2021 report on Wisconsin's status of climate change. We'll look at a summary of that report. They said that Wisconsin's, since 1950, statewide temperatures have warmed by 3 degrees, precipitation increased by 17%. Meanwhile, the last two decades have been the warmest on record. The last decade has been the wettest. The report stresses the need for significant and rapid reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. Do you agree with that?
I do. And I think the utilities agree as well. And I think that's why you are seeing such aggressive goals in terms of reducing emissions, because they recognize that we have a very short window in which to make changes. In 2020, Wisconsin still remained at 70% of its generation coming from fossil fuels. That looks to be going down to about 60%, by 2028, so in the next 6 years, but that still means we have a long way to go. And I will tell you, it can admittedly for me be sometimes frustrating because there's a sense of urgency that comes along with trying to get those reductions to where they need to be. But it is always coupled with that need to ensure that the lights stay on, that our Wisconsin utilities remain reliable, and that it's being done cost effectively. So it is a constant balancing act. But there's no doubt that we need to continue to make progress in terms of reducing emissions.
Do you think the public understands that urgency to the degree that they probably need to as it relates even to their utility bill?
I don't know. I think what I have seen over my last 25 years in this industry is an increased interest in electricity and energy and where it's coming from, and an increased understanding. But remember, it's not just the energy industry that's contributing to emissions either, right? I mean, the transportation sector and the industrial sector, those two sectors combined are also contributing. So we have to look at it holistically, and we have to ensure that we're not solely focused on the energy industry. Yes, there's work to be done, but I think by and large, the energy industry, utilities, its customers, its shareholders, its regulators understand the importance of reducing emissions, and now we have to continue to focus on other sectors as well.
You just touched on this, that a quarter of Wisconsin's energy consumption happening in the transportation sector. There's been a rapidly growing interest in electric vehicles. Some say registrations in Wisconsin up over 100%. Is Wisconsin ready for that rapid popularity of electric vehicles? Can the energy grid handle that?
Yes, the grid can handle it. What we need to do and what we are working on is we need to be able to collaborate with the states that are neighboring us and build a very robust and reliable network of EV charging stations. And to that end, Governor Evers has signed an MOU along with four other Midwestern states to ensure that there can be a charging corridor that makes sense for our region. But from an electric grid perspective, yes. And our utilities, we had another generic investigation a couple of years ago at the PSC to look into that very issue. Can the current grid handle an influx of EVs on the system? What's it going to do to demand? And as a result of that investigation, we saw all five of our investor-owned utilities come up with their own EV pricing programs. And what that does is it tries to steer EV owners to certain times of day to charge their vehicles so that they're not adding stress to the grid.
Okay. So this was another area that the legislature kind of struggled with this past session, was who's controlling mm-hmm. local EV charging stations and who can construct them. Do we have enough infrastructure of EV charging stations right in Wisconsin, or are we behind?
I don't know that we're behind. I think we are probably at pace with our neighbors, some more than others. I think, of course, we're behind the coasts, right? I mean, you saw rapid adoption of EVs on both the East Coast and the West Coast very early on. And the Midwest, in general, lags adoption. But I think that's the reason behind that MOU with the five Midwestern states, is to ensure that we do have enough charging infrastructure so that when you're going to decide, should I buy an electric vehicle, the first thing in your mind isn't, can I get from Madison to Crivitz on a single charge, or am I going to be stranded some way on my way up north this summer? That range anxiety is something that we need to work on. And the way you work on that is you build charging stations in throughout all of Wisconsin and then our neighboring states.
When do you think that issue will be resolved, or better, for drivers of electric vehicles?
Well, I think it's coming, and we've got federal dollars that are coming in, and the State Department of Transportation, they are working on it. We at the PSC are helping along with other state agencies to make sure that we're looking at all of the right issues in terms of building out that infrastructure, but I have no doubt that we will get there.
Recently, the PSC approved Wisconsin's largest utility scale solar project with battery storage. Mm-hmm. Is that an exciting new innovation?
It is. It's exciting because it's the first time, as you said, that we approved battery storage. And as we look at this transition to get to zero carbon, we know that it's going to take more innovation in terms of technology because we can't get there with the technology that we currently have. We will not have enough solar farms. We will not have enough wind farms. And quite frankly, there aren't enough nuclear plants that are in service right now to get us to 100% zero carbon. So we're going to need things like battery storage. And it's an incredibly exciting time right now in the industry as we see these advancements in technology. But we're going to need more. It's going to go beyond just battery storage. There's a lot of talk about hydrogen and how can hydrogen be used as a fuel source. There's a lot of talk about, are we ready to sort of shrink our nuclear facilities and look at small modular nuclear? So there are a lot of people working on what's going to be the way to get us to 100% zero carbon, but certainly the first large-scale battery energy storage system is a first step.
Switching overseas now, we are covering lots of ground.
Yes.
The war in Ukraine really having an impact on natural gas prices. What does that look like in Wisconsin? Are we feeling that?
We are not. So maybe a small uptick, but nothing major. In Wisconsin, really our natural gas prices are more domestic focused. So you will see movement in our natural gas prices more on a domestic level than on an international level. We're really fortunate in Wisconsin to have gas mitigation plans in place for all of our utilities and gas supply plans. So the commission has done a really good job in working with the utilities to ensure that their portfolio and how much they're buying off the spot market is mitigated. And we do that as a means to try and keep gas prices as smooth as possible. But of course, any geopolitical incident is going to have some sort of effect. We're seeing effects on things like the price of components for solar panels, for instance. So it is something that we keep an eye on, but fortunately, we haven't seen a large impact on natural gas prices here in Wisconsin.
Energy security is another issue tied to the war in Ukraine. Last week, the FBI kind of warned against hacking of energy companies. Are we ready for any of that in Wisconsin?
We are. We have wonderful cybersecurity measures that are in place. We have a great team at the PSC who's in constant contact with the utilities about their cybersecurity efforts. I was just briefed on one just last week. And so this is something that the industry as a whole takes very seriously, and the utilities themselves also take it very, very seriously.
Biggest energy challenges for Wisconsin in the next year or two?
I think continuing to do the balance the correct way in getting to zero carbon while trying to keep rates low. You know, the pandemic really underscored the fact that there are a lot of residents within this state who struggle to pay their utility bills. And that has to be part of our calculus when we're looking at what utilities are coming to us with, whether that's a rate increase, whether that's a new gas facility, whether it's a new solar facility. We have to continue to look at what is the impact going to be on customers.
And speaking of customers, what kind of changes can consumers expect in the next year or two as it relates to energy?
So I think one of the biggest things is they're going to start to see the availability of federal funds. That started with COVID. There are a number of avenues for customers who are struggling to pay their bills to have access to federal funds. I will just reiterate what we try to say at the commission every year around this time, and that is on April 15th, the statewide moratorium on disconnections ends. So if people are at risk of being disconnected and they are behind on their utility bills, they need to reach out to their utility provider. Those utility providers have access to programs that have been federally funded to help customers pay their bills. I think customers will also start to see an increase of choices available to them in terms of how they can control their energy usage. And that's going to help. That's going to help drive down demand for electricity and help keep us on track to get to zero carbon.
Lots of changes on the horizon. Thank you for sharing an update with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.